This summer, we have been talking about how do you get to places, or how do you get somewhere in life or in relationships, whether it's hobbies or finances, ultimately spiritual maturity. Whatever it is, wherever it is that we want to go, what we've seen is that you have to map it out. It's not just going to happen by accident. You're not just going to stumble into it. You need to map out where it is that you're going to go. And that starts by picking the right path. And after we've picked the right path, then recognizing that along the way there's going to be some danger, there might be some obstacles, looking at how we overcome those things. We saw that when we begin to make choices, we need to lean on God and lean on His knowledge rather than leaning on our own knowledge and our own way. And then we also saw that what gets our attention determines the direction. So what you're focused on will impact where you go. And so we started to look at how is it that we map it out? How do we begin to determine the direction that we're going to go? If you've been here over the last several weeks, you know that we've had different guys up here speaking. And what I love about that is that you're getting to hear multiple voices speaking about this same thing. And so different perspectives ultimately talking about how do we map it out. Last week, Paul Kennel was here and shared with us. And a big thanks to Paul for doing that. It gave us as a staff an opportunity to get away. As you may know, a lot of our staff, they essentially volunteer. And they have real jobs, you know, during the week and work 9 to 5. And so for us to get away as a staff, they would have to take extra vacation time. And so by Paul preaching last week and our youth band playing, it gave us as a staff an opportunity to just go away for the weekend and build relationships and hang out and ride motocross and do crazy stuff, but just build relationship there. And so it was great to have Paul speak, and I know he talked about choices, which is a great fit, obviously, into mapping it out. And each of us make choices every day, right? You chose to come to church. You could have chosen to do a lot of things, but we make these decisions, these choices, some big, some small, but those choices ultimately lead to where we're going to go. So we started looking at some broad ideas, and then we started to narrow it down. And the simple truth that we're beginning to realize and that we're looking at is if we want to accomplish something in life, if there's a goal that we have, if we want to grow in a particular area, it's often the small things that no one sees that results in the big things that everyone wants. We look at people, we're amazed by what they've accomplished and what they've done, and we're like, man, how did they get there? There must have been some big thing that they did. Well, it's the small things that we do over and over again, the small choices that result in big things that everyone wants. And it's an important principle that we have to understand that it's going to be those small things that we choose in our life that we do again and again and again that begin to have an impact that bring about the big things that we want. And so we started talking about it in simple terms and said, okay, God, give us an area to look at in life. Give us one word to focus on. And then we started to talk about our thoughts and taking that one word or that one area and allowing God to begin to work in the thoughts that we have. And we began to understand that our thoughts are critical because our thoughts lead to the words that we speak. And then our words begin to lead to the actions that we take. And then our actions lead to the habits that we form. And so the small things become so important in the big things of life. And so we started to begin to develop that. And this morning, what I want to talk to you about is the power of the words that we use and the things that we say and what we communicate. At the beginning of the Bible, we read out of the story of creation, and what it says is that God used words to create the world. He spoke things into existence. Now, obviously, you and I, we can't speak things into reality, right? Like, flying car, right? Like, no. You know, wallet full of dollars. I would say if you're ever going to do wallet full of dollars, like, be specific. Like, what kind of dollars, right? Wallet full of singles, not so good. So just go for it. Say hundreds. Okay, so, or, you know, I'd like to grow 5 inches now because I've always wanted to be 6'3". Like, we know that doesn't work, right? We can't just speak. God didn't give us the ability to just say words and make things happen. But God demonstrated the power of words so that we would begin to recognize that the things that we say and the things that we speak make a difference. He spoke, created the world. We speak, and it creates things in our lives. Near the middle of the Bible, we come to the book of Proverbs, and there's this powerful statement about words. The scripture's on the screen. It's in your message notes. So God speaks, creates the world. When you and I speak, listen to what it can do. It says, the tongue has the power of life and death. Now, help me out here real quick. Ready? Help me out with this. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but... what? Are you kidding me? We've had it wrong the whole time. Right? Really? I mean, literally, it should be sticks and stones may break my bones and words can flat out kill me. And the fact is, if you want to change your life, you need to change the words that you speak. Oh, Brent, it's not that easy. You're right. If you keep saying that, it won't be that easy. It's not that easy. Yeah, I heard you. And if you keep saying it won't be easy, it won't be. But the truth is, if you want to change your life, you have to change the words that you speak and the words that you think and the words that you say to yourself. Because just a minute ago when we were talking about this, we all nodded in agreement that the small things make a big difference. Words are pretty small, right? They're small. But they make a big difference in the life that we live. I mean, if I didn't think words were a big deal, if I didn't think words made a difference, I should probably find a new career, right? if you don't think words make a difference, you should probably find something better to do with your Sundays, right? Like, if words don't have power, then this is kind of a waste of time. But I think we all know that words are small but have a dynamic impact on our lives. And the reality about words is this, is that words can either be life-taking or life-giving. Your words will either be life-taking or life-giving. Your tongue has the power of life or death. The words that you say will take life or give life. But think about how careless we tend to be with our words. This week, I spent all kinds of time trying to make excuses for myself. Right? What if I have to tell somebody how they need to correct something? What if I'm trying to be funny? I try to be funny all the time. Right? What if somebody has hurt me and I need to make sure they know it? What if Pete Carroll needs to know to go for it on fourth down? We got to talk, right? Even in those tough moments, in the attempts to be funny, in the necessary conversations, those words in that moment still have the ability to either be life-taking or life-giving. Our words are either giving or taking life, even in the tough and difficult moments. There was a guy by the name of James who wrote about the power of the tongue years and years ago. The guy named James, he was Jesus' brother. Biblical scholars, this is just a side note, but biblical scholars would say that the fact that James believed that Jesus was truly God is one of the greatest pieces of evidence of the divinity of Christ. The fact that Jesus was actually God. Because think about this. Consider if you've ever watched a set of brothers. Have you ever watched some brothers hang out? Maybe you are a brother or you had a brother. Like, what would a brother have to do to convince his brothers that he's the Son of God? Like, that's a pretty big deal, right? Imagine Jesus and James as kids, right? And Jesus is like, yo, James, play some Battleship? And James is like, dude, you know where my ships are at. This is not fun at all. You always know exactly where I put my ships. Jesus is like, okay, all right. James, let's just wrestle. You created the world, dude. I guess it's not fair. I can't. You're too strong. Jesus is like, okay. Let's just have a little swimming race, right? We'll just... James is like, you just walk on the water. Jesus, this is never fair, right? Okay. But in reality, think about for Jesus, how full of authenticity, how full of grace and compassion he must have been to convince his own brother that he's truly the Son of God. Who would know him better than his own brother? And his brother said, this is the Son of God. Jesus truly is God. No brother, I have two of them. No brother would give up that power unless it was true. We would never do that. But Jesus is God. And then James goes on and he begins to speak about the words that we use. This is what James says. He says, we can make a large horse go wherever we want it by means of a small bit in its mouth. And a small rudder makes a huge ship turn wherever the pilot chooses to go, even though the winds are strong. In the same way, the tongue is a small thing that makes grand speeches, but a tiny spark can set a great forest on fire. Just think about speeches that you've heard, speeches that have the ability that are crafted just right to change what people are doing. I mean, I depend on God to work through the words that I say. But I spend a lot of time carefully thinking about what will the words be that I use, because I recognize that words are very powerful. And those words can be positive or those words can be negative. Just like we're finding out in our state, all right? A tiny spark can result in a great forest fire that can have all kinds of destruction. But in the same way, the words that we use can bring all kinds of life, or they can bring all kinds of death. You and I speak words all day long, and they're either life-giving or they're life-taking. Painful example from my life. Just happened this last week. My son Cade is going to be a sophomore in high school, and last summer, I started telling Cade that I wanted him to run cross country when he started high school because a couple things, it would teach him discipline and he would get involved with it, and it would give him an opportunity as a freshman to get to know other freshmen that are coming into the school. It'd also help him know some sophomores and juniors and seniors. It'd be a great kind of, you know, step in, because they practice all summer and then they'd jump right into fall. And so I made him run, you know, we talked it through and I pretty much made him do it, but we got him the right gear and the right equipment. And so he started running cross country, and yeah, he did all right. He wasn't great at it. He did it, and he stuck it through and stayed with it. And sort of towards the end of the year, his shoes started to wear out. And so he's like, "Dad, I need new shoes." And I was like, "I don't want to buy any new shoes unless you're going to do this next year." And he's like, "Yeah, I'll do it. So we bought him new shoes. And so now we're into this summer, and the cross-country coaches started sending emails like, "Hey, we're starting our summer practices. Who's coming? And we got, you know, coming in the fall." And so I started to say to Cade, "Hey, it's time. Like, cross country's here, and you decided you're going to do it, and let's go." And he's like, "I don't, Dad, I don't really want to run cross country." I was like, "Buddy, you know, this is a good thing." And I explained how it helped him connect to other people last year. And then I started to say some things. I was like, "Listen, you need something in your life that's going to help you become more disciplined. You need to do something that's going to help you not quit when things are hard. You need to start working on things rather." I just said, "You know what? You don't need to be good at just hanging out." Last year, I also challenged him to start to join this drama class. And the class actually happens in the middle of school. And then after school, all of the productions that the school does, drama, it's out of this class. This is where, it's an elite group. He's amazing at drama. He's okay at cross country. He's amazing at drama. And I talked him into it. And so he's like, "Dad, do you think at drama we just sit around?" And I was like, "No, I want you to do something hard." And all of a sudden, I just saw him just get deflated. Because what I thought was hard and what I thought would teach him discipline was the thing that I believed in, yet this was the thing that he was really good at, and he'll do great at it, and it's teaching him all those things. And his reactions became snappy, and I could tell he was hurt, and I literally just stole life from him. And then I went to work and started working on this message. So we had a follow-up conversation where Dad admitted he was wrong. And I apologized, and I said, "You're amazing at what you do." Think about the managers in your life, or the bosses that you've had, the boss that you love to work for, the owner of the company that you were like, "I'll give extra effort," or the manager where you're like, "Oh, yeah, I'll stick around." They used words that gave you energy and that were motivating, and it gave you life. But the boss that you dreaded running into, or the manager you hoped you didn't get scheduled for the same shift, or the owner, you're like, "I'm not helping you grow your business." They used words that tore you down, that deflated your desire to work. They took life from you. You can't control the words that your boss uses, or your kids, or your spouse, or your friends. You can't control that. But you and I can certainly choose and determine the words that we'll say. And our words have so much power. And the truth is that words will set direction for both your life and for others. Solomon, the wisest man that ever lived, wrote the first verse that we looked at in terms of words having the power of life or death. And then oftentimes the writings that he would say after that began to would continue to contrast this idea of life-giving words and life-taking words. Proverbs 12:18, he writes this. He says, "The words of the reckless pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing." Reckless words pierce like a sword. I have never been pierced with a sword. But my guess is you don't forget it. Anybody been pierced by a sword? You have? No. If you're pierced by a sword, I don't think you forget. And according to every movie I've watched where somebody gets pierced by a sword, it's pretty difficult to function afterwards. But I'll bet the words that have been spoken to you even years ago that were reckless, pierced like a sword, and you haven't forgotten them. And they've made it difficult to function. We have to realize the potential of the words that we speak recklessly and the fact that they can pierce like a sword. And someone else right now is not forgetting the words that you spoke recklessly at one point. And their life, they're having difficulty functioning. And we set direction for other people's lives. We set direction for our own life because that relationship is certainly impacted when our words are just carelessly thrown around but pierced like swords. On the flip side of that, there's another powerful side where there's people around us that are hurting and are broken and are struggling that need hope. And when we speak the right words, when we speak correct words, they bring healing and they bring life and they restore those that are broken. Solomon in chapter 15 goes on and he says, "The soothing tongue is a tree of life, but a perverse tongue crushes the spirit." I don't think there's a person in the room that has escaped their spirit being crushed by words that somebody else has spoken. I bet you we would all say, yeah, at some point that happened to me. And those words could have just seemed like they were meaningless. Just throw it out there, right? Like, you know, somebody walks up and they're like, "Hey, did you actually mean to do your hair like that?" Like, that was, and you're like, "I paid money for that, right? Hey, how come you're not married yet? You're getting old. You know, you're like, you're old enough. You should be married by now, right?" Like, right? People just throw that stuff out there. They're not trying to be mean. They're just made. And sometimes they're intentional. "I can't stand you. Hey, we found somebody else to do the job you've done. They can do it better. Never liked your cooking. You're pathetic." These words just take life and they pierce like a sword and they crush the spirit. But on the other hand, many of us have had the opportunity for somebody to say something that's been a blessing and been life-giving. "Man, I'm so proud of you. You're the best. You're a dream come true. You know what? I am so thankful that God put you in my life." These words, they build us up, they bring healing, they give life, they allow us to face obstacles and difficulties that we wouldn't otherwise be able to face. And again, we can't change what others say. I mean, we could certainly choose to look to put ourselves around people or surround ourselves with people that tend to say life-giving words rather than life-taking words. You can do that, but more than anything, you and I control our own tongues. So let's honestly take a look at the words that we use. A couple weeks ago, we took a thought audit. I challenge you this morning to take a word audit. Consider for a minute the words that you speak. Are the words that you speak life-giving to others or life-taking? Are the words that you say to yourself life-giving or life-taking? Start with other people. When you speak, are you life-taking? Do your words tend to sound like, "You didn't do a good job"? "Why is your room always a mess? I can't stand that you do it that way." Are you always going to leave the lid up or the seat up? I don't even know. That's probably a problem in my house. I don't know. "You're pathetic. You know what? You just drive me crazy. I wish we'd never made that decision. Are you ever going to get it right?" Does that sound like the words that you say? If it does, you're probably circling a one or a four. Or on the other hand, do your words tend to be life-giving? "Man, I'm so proud of you. You're the best. You know what? I thank God that you're a part of my life. Babe, that's an incredible meal. Hey, you did a great job. You're incredible. You know what? You're one of the best employees we've ever had. I'm so glad we hired you. You are so valuable to our team and our organization." Take a moment. Like on that list, 1 to 10, are your words life-taking or are they life-giving? When you speak to other people, where do you fall? Then for yourself, when you speak to yourself, and I'm not talking like crazy person with like, you know, but like when your inner thoughts, you know, like when you're having, you know, like, hey, what do you say to yourself? To yourself, are you life-taking or are you life-giving? Do you find yourself being like, "Oh man, you're probably going to blow it again. You're really no good. Brent, you know what? Life is just always going to be bad. You can ask her out, but she'll probably shoot you down. I'd do it in a public place because it won't be so bad, right? Like, it's probably going to be another tough day. I'm so tired. Nothing ever works out for me. I never catch a break. Is that you? I mean, probably a lower number. If, on the other hand, you find yourself saying, you know what? God is with me. You know what? I think God's going to bless, and I'm so thankful for another day. And you know what? We're going to nail it today. It was hard yesterday, but today we're going to do it. We're going to make this work. You know, Christ in me, I can do all things because he gives me the strength. This is going to be a challenge. It's not going to be easy, but God's going to get me through this. We're going to walk through this with God, and it's going to work. Then you probably want to circle a higher number. And unless you're circling like 8 to 10, then we got some great room for improvement. Because when we begin to know that words have such power, when we begin to see that we can use our words to begin to change our life just by the words that we speak, because small changes make a big difference. And words are small, but what is it that you're saying? And so if our words have the power to bring life, or if our words have the power to bring death, we probably need to figure out, how do we say words that bring life? So for the remainder, here's what we're going to look at. I want to look at two things, two simple steps to help you have words that will be life-giving. Now, when you hear these, you're going to be like, oh man, you sound like my mama. Well, no apologies, because your mama was right. You know, we just didn't listen very well, right? Big surprise, we didn't listen to mom. Here's the first step, very simple. If you can't say something helpful, just skip it. We've all heard for years, right? If you can't say anything nice at all, don't say anything. You know, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. Right? But sometimes you're going to say something that's just not nice because it's a difficult conversation. So that's why I chose helpful, because there's a chance you're going to have a tough conversation with an employee at some point. Maybe they're not getting their job done. Like, they're not going to think that's very nice, but it could be helpful. Maybe you have a family member that's hurt you. And you need to have a conversation. It might not feel very nice, but it can be helpful. What you have to do is you have to figure out, how can I communicate this in such a way that it's helpful, that it's life-giving? And if you can't figure out how to make it helpful and make it life-giving, then don't say it. The book of Ephesians says this, Ephesians 4:29 says, "Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen." Do you realize that if most of us applied this to our lives, just this verse, don't worry about the rest of the Bible, just take that verse right there, your life would get so much better. Think about how your marriage would change, and your parenting, and your work relationships, and your friendships. Your life would change in remarkable ways. You would find yourself avoiding conflict. You'd be finding joy, you'd be discovering depth and love and satisfaction that you've never known before. Now, don't elbow your spouse. Because I think we can assume the same is true of nonverbal, right? Nonverbal communication applies here as well. So let's just throw it out there. Don't elbow unless helpful, right? Don't nudge unless helpful. I don't know when this would ever be helpful. Don't roll your eyes unless helpful. Just don't. Right? There is this monk. Young guy decided to be a monk. And so he reports to the monastery. And he shows up. And they begin to show him where his room's going to be. And what the prayer schedule's going to be. And his daily tasks. And where they're going to eat the meals. And they explain all of this thing. And then they say to him, listen, at this monastery, the thing that we hold up above everything else is silence. And so what you're going to be allowed to do is every year at your annual review, you'll get to say two words. But other than that, we want you to not talk. So he goes through the first year and he's at his prayers and he's doing his jobs. He's doing his tasks and he comes in for his first year and he meets with, I don't know what you call a head monk, but he meets with a head monk, probably a name. Head monk meets with the head monk and the head monk says, okay, so you've been with us for a year. Do you have anything you'd like to say? He said, bed hard. They're like, okay, they'll take you in and we'll show you. So they led him to this room and they had a bunch of extra mats and foam mats that he could add to his bed. And they're like, you can take as many as you want. And so he took some foam mats, made his bed a little bit softer and went on with the next week, next year, and he was doing everything he needed to. He was going to his prayers, doing his, you know, all the things. Next year goes around, he comes back for a second review. And they said, hey, what, any words you want to say to us? And he said, food, bland. They're like, okay. So they walk him to this other room, and they're like, here's all of the salt. You're welcome to the salt. Anytime you want, you just get the salt. You can fancy up the food as much as you want. There's your salt. And so then it goes off to his next year, and he does the whole year, and doesn't say anything. Finally comes in for his third annual review, and they walk him in, and the head monk says, okay, what do you got? You have anything you want to say this year? And he said, I quit. And the head monk said, well, thank goodness. You've only complained since you've gotten here. If you can't communicate something that's helpful, just skip it. Just close it. Just bite. Just zip it. Don't say it. It's pretty simple. Kind of direct, but just don't say it if it's not helpful. The second simple truth is this. If you think something good, say it. Anytime you think something good about somebody else, if you think something good about God, if you have a thought about yourself that you're like, okay, tell yourself. If there's a circumstance going on and you have a thought that's good, share it. Because when you share it, when you say those words, you now give life to it because you've brought it out. Proverbs 16 says this, gracious words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. Notice what he didn't write. He didn't write, gracious thoughts are a honeycomb. Those kind ideas that you keep to yourself will heal those that you're thinking about. The words have to be spoken. The idea has to be shared. The thought has to be expressed. Right? I can have some really good thought about you. In fact, right here on the front row. Are you okay if I do that? I'm going to think some really good things about you. Ready? There's good thoughts just running through my brain. Pretty helpful. Is that good? Is that no, that's just creepy. I didn't help her. She's like, I don't know what you're thinking about. It doesn't do anything. But if I were to say to you, you're so strong and amazing. I admire you. I've been watching what you do on Facebook in your life. I think you're an incredible mom. I think you're an amazing wife. Holy cow, is that not better? Which did you like better, the thoughts or the actual words? Two, perfect, see? So when we speak the words, we now set them free, and the words have power and they give life. I didn't even say it to some of you and you felt better. And those words have power and they bless. I mean, think about this. Even when people are encouraging us with words that we know are going to happen, even when it's just cheesy and expected, it's still sweet, like honeycomb. My grandma passed away a couple of months ago, and as she was getting older, she had trouble hearing, and she would often say, I can't hear what people are telling me. But she would come to church, and she would listen to me preach. And she would tell me afterwards, she'd say, you know what, Brent? I can't hear what most people say to me. But when you preach, for some reason, your voice is just perfect, and I hear every word. And then she'd say, you know what? You're my favorite preacher. My grandfather was a preacher. Her husband was a preacher. And every time she would come to church, she would tell me both of those things. Man, your voice, I can just hear it like nothing else. You're the best preacher I've ever heard. I knew it was coming and I loved it. She could have been proud and just held those thoughts, but she set them free. And they were sweet to my soul. They were words that were good, that gave life. Listen, if you desire to have too many friends, if you would like it if lots of people thought highly of you and wanted to be around you, if you thought it'd be great if too many people were inviting you over to hang out, if that seems like a problem you'd like to have, take effort to have gracious words. Use words that give life, and you'll have more people around you than you know what to do with. If you use words that take life, good luck. If you have something good to share, you should say it. And if what you have to say is not helpful, you should skip it. In your program, these connect cards are in there, and the challenge is for you to think about what it is that you've heard and what it is that you're going to do with this. So as you think about the power of the words that you say and the impact that they can have on your life and other people, what's your next step? Maybe your next step is to spend time observing the impact your words have. Maybe your next step is to take an honest evaluation of how your words have set the direction of your life. Maybe your next step is to commit this week to holding back words that you know aren't helpful. Maybe your next step is to pursue words this week that encourage and strengthen. Let's pray. God, would you help us not to be afraid of words, but to recognize the power they have and the positive, helpful, life-giving power that they have. God, thank you for the capacity that you give us to be able to do that. Help us to take some extra effort this week to be aware of the words that we say. In Jesus' name, amen.